And we are back, Stripe Show Podcast, on another week in the winter in January. And I say winter, and as a lot of you know, I'm coming to you from Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida. And it's winter here, folks. I'm looking outside right now, and it looks like it might snow. I'm not kidding you. It's cold, and there's a front moving down, and some people are saying it might snow in Northeast Florida here later on today, which is crazy. And I know a lot of you are in single digits out there, and it's like, come on, Travis, it's freezing up here in the Midwest and Northwest and all that. But it's winter months, and we'll get through it here in January. February is around the corner. Then before you know it, you'll be playing golf. It'll be spring. You'll be out there playing golf. And my guy joining me here today, this week on the Stripe Show Pod, he's coming to you for some warm weather in San Diego, California. He's teaching his boys at the Farmers Insurance Open. Scott Hamilton, thanks for getting up with me, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, I've been up for a while. Being from Georgia, I never get on the time zone out here. So I've been up since 4 waiting to call you.
It's brutal, isn't it? It is brutal. Man, I'm from the West Coast, and I go back there, visit my family, and man, you're up at 4 o'clock, 3:30. It feels like there's 18 hours in a day. It does.
Yeah. But also, like, I was sound asleep last night at 8. So after I did my fancy dinner at the Whole Food salad bar.
Oh, right there in San Diego?
Yeah. It's fast. I like it.
What is it, 75? I mean, that's kind of what it is every day, right? 75?
Yeah. Yeah, it starts out. It was actually the first day we were here, it was in the 50s, like 55, and then it warmed up to maybe 65, but it was nice yesterday. Yeah. I'm not sure what today's going to be, but hopefully it'll be really nice.
So you came from Palm Springs last week straight over to San Diego?
No, I went back home. I've got a couple girls and my wife, so I try to go home and give my wife a little break. So I flew back and forth. And then next week, Pebble Week, I'm going to fly out to Pebble like on Tuesday and then stay out and then go over to Phoenix or Scottsdale and then come back like Wednesday. So I am doing like a 2-week deal just because I get tired of flying back and forth, you know? Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a lot to look at. I know you've got 4 guys in the field this week.
Which is like a week off for me.
Wow.
Pretty awesome.
Maverick McNeely, Jacob Bridgman, my boy Lanto Griffin, love him. Brandon Thorberry, and then you got others: Tom Hoagie, Chris Kirk. They're not playing this week. We're going to look at a lot of these swings this week. We were, before we came on air, going through kind of some of the patterns that these guys take on, which is fun because I always like having you on, Scott, because all your players look different. I do think there are some teachers, which is, look, it's fine. You can have success a lot of different ways, but I do think there are some teachers where the pattern looks the same, with most all of their players. But with you, Scott, I mean, you look at Maverick McNeely, you look at Tom Hoagie, and then you look at Chris Kirk. I mean, these guys are different as far as the way their pattern. So we're going to get into some of that. We got Show Us Your Swing coming up later on as well. We're going to look at some amateur swings. We appreciate you guys sending them in. Email Travis at TravisFultonGolf.com. You can also tweet me at Travis Fulton out there on Twitter. You can send the videos there, and then we're going to get to those and load them in. But before we get to our first swing, we're going to start with Mav here in a minute, but just give my audience a quick snapshot of what your week's like. You fly into San Diego this week, and then like what happens? Like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, before the tournament starts.
Well, this week's kind of weird because it starts on the tournament starts tomorrow. Right. So I flew in early Sunday morning so I could help. Maverick did not play in Palm Springs, so I flew in early, and Maverick and I met up like at 1:30 on Sunday and practice for about 4 hours. So normally on Sundays I'll fly in late, and I kind of figured that out during COVID. Using the Atlanta airport Monday morning's a nightmare. So the COVID thing taught me, because we had to do testing, I started flying in late Sunday night And then it was just so much easier navigating the Atlanta airport and getting my hotel and everything. So I fly in, and most weeks I leave on Wednesday, unless,
Okay.
I'm flying to Europe
Yeah.
or somewhere. And then occasionally, a couple times a year, I'll try to hang out during the weekend and watch guys play, especially if
Okay.
somebody's struggling.
So let's get into math. You mentioned Maverick McNealy and Stanford grad. I know a guy that you've put a lot of time into this move, and I've seen some of the differences in the pattern. I'll let you speak to it. But it is kind of a unique pattern in kind of its own way, Scott. I think, when you look at the shaft and it, I think historically, wants to point maybe a little laid off, what we would deem at times laid off. And I even at times the club face maybe even rotating a fair amount open, right, in the backswing. And I know you've worked on some of those things.
Yeah, that's exactly the description. He laid off in my world gives you an advantage for a fade. So whenever I started teaching Maverick, he was way deep on his backswing. His arms got way behind him and he was across the line. And when he'd swing the club out, the face would open significantly. He'd get way underneath with an open club face and really couldn't take a divot. And he ran way up in front of it and then dumped his arms out like it was. And it, if you don't remember, but he hurt his collarbone because his lead shoulder was going up so high so he wouldn't hit fat shots. So we changed him significantly where we got his arms to move up and out and try to get the face more open and get it laid off so he could close it on the down and keep it up on top of the plane. And I think he's 20 something in the world now, 26 or 7th or something. So, I mean, it really, and the other thing that, it's not like I'm some genius on this. I just asked Maverick when he was at Stanford to look at his swings because, I think he won like 11 tournaments in college and he had his arms way more in front of him and he was way more fade biased looking back in his like college days. So we kind of just reverted back to what had worked for him before,
So you got the hand path, the left arm, things kind of working more out and up. And then from there he would, just try to fade it versus in deep, right?
He was in and deep, and it would get him across. Like his right elbow bend would get incorrect. He wasn't very wide, and it'd get him across. And then, like the first time I helped him was like 2 years ago at Tampa, and I'm like, holy smokes, man! And it took us a little bit to figure out how to shift him out there, but I mean. The guy works. He's really smart. Like he has some engineering degree from Stanford, and he works really hard. And there's really two things we're working on now. Is we on the range? He still had a tendency at the top that he would steepen the shaft. Like that one he didn't, but he would pull the handle, the grip down, and make the shaft stand up. So then he'd get in like a late steep. And then he'd have to fix it. When he did that, his right knee would kick towards the ball and his pelvis would be really low through impact. So what we've really worked hard on out this week is just not steepening it. Like he does a drill where he takes his right finger and thumb off, right index finger and thumb off the club. So he doesn't put any pressure on to tilt the shaft up. And then we're trying to get his left leg kind of out of there and his pelvis higher through the hit so there's somewhere for his right knee to go so his rotation of his lower body's better. It's pretty simple, really, what we're working on now.
So what do I do now? So tell me my right.
Take your index finger and your thumb off. I'm a really big lead arm guy.
I got it. I
So
got it.
what happened was he'd swing it up there and then he'd put pressure on the shaft and change the direction and stand it up. And get a steep. So he just hits lots of balls with this with those fingers off, and then he goes and tries to replicate it with both hands on there.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's the downside, right? Of if a player gets, if they get it a little pointing left at the top, maybe too much, then if they do pull on it, that handle, that force, that shaft wants to get in line and it gets a little bit tippy and steep and transition, and then you got some work to do at the bottom to fix it. So not for him, it sounds like not pulling on that handle is huge.
It's the probably the most important, and that's what I told him. He actually came out to Palm Springs and we practiced one day, and that's all we worked on. If he doesn't steepen it, like, that center mass is hunting the end of that grip. And if you torque that grip around in the wrong direction, that club's going to move all over the place. So, I think people lose sight of how heavy a golf club is in motion, So I always try to, with my guys and the pattern we're working on for them, we're trying to use the center mass and advantage for them. So it's way easier to repeat what they're doing, And I tell people all the time, my job is not the shot they hit a foot from the hole. My job is how bad's a crappy a shot they hit all day,
Last thing on this, and we'll go to Hoagie, who's another interesting move, but did his turn get deeper too as he worked it more out in front of him? Did he
Yeah, I
start
think
turning?
so a little bit. Yeah, he got, when we get him on 3D, he got more pelvic tilt, he loaded up more. It's just he was running in front of it so much and casting, on the way down. I don't know if you'd really call it casting, but he was widening his arms, so he'd run up and try to throw his arms at the ball, and it was a bad impact position.
It's amazing, really, that a player of that caliber can play at such a high level, running up and losing, getting wide and sacrificing shaft lean and all those things. And yet the brilliance of just control of face and path and all those things at the bottom, it's remarkable, really.
Oh yeah, it's crazy, man. These guys are next level. The funnel's so small now by the time you get out here. It's crazy how kind of incorrect people can make golf swings and how well they work out here. I watch it all the time. Like I was watching guys on the range yesterday. I'm like, man, that guy's really good, and that doesn't look that good.
Well, I think that's the brilliance and the art of teaching, right? And where you've had so much success, Scott, is to be able to look at those patterns and get to know that person and then figure out which buttons to push because there are a lot of buttons you can push even at this caliber, right? Because we know
Oh, yeah.
what great looks like. We know what the science suggests. We know these things. And there's a lot of buttons you could push, but which buttons you push and how you position it to that player and how that player responds. I mean, there's a real art to that.
I mean, the interesting thing I always find out is, I've ran a gear system since 2017. I've been blessed because I teach so many tour guys. That I've watched how Boo Weekly does it, how Kirk does it, how I mean, you go down the list, and I've 3D'd for my other teaching friends too, guys. So there's commonalities in what all these guys do, and then there's uniqueness, like in what they do with their spine through the hit. Most of the guys that are fade biased left bend their spine on the takeaway to stall out right bend, and the best thing I ever did for myself was buy that gear system and watch all my guys and not really listen to what other people say, but just watch what the good players do. And it's just, there's about three patterns guys have on the tour guys, on what their spine and pelvis and knees and it's got me way more in tune to right arm bends, like what happens with the right arm and when it happens. So, it's just things, it's made me look at 2D videos differently than I used to. So, that's been great.
Well, here's one. You talk about the spine, right? And this one to me has when you talk about unique swings with personality, like to me, this is always one that I would put at the top of the list that you've worked with for years. And this guy can just absolutely flush his irons. And this is Tom Hoagie. And some of you I know are listening right now, and we'll articulate what we're looking at, but a lot of you are watching on the YouTube channel. But Hoagie, when I look at this, Scott, this is a guy that kind of stays down and flexion some, which you don't see a ton. You don't see a ton at this level where a player would actually get a little bit shorter in the backswing, maybe, as he
Well,
turns
I
to the
mean,
top.
it's interesting about Hoagie's always been a phenomenal iron player, and his When he kind of got me to help him years and years ago, it was more about he needed to drive it better, you know? And obviously we work on his iron play all the time, but you know, it was about teaching. So I know the guy's a phenomenal iron player, so I'm not going to go change this pattern. I'm just going to try to figure out how to make him drive it better with that pattern. Is that a pattern I would teach somebody as a kid? No. But he's unbelievable at it because he just gets on top of it and covers it and he's the one guy I teach that he hits whatever shots required. He is not really super biased one way or the other. Like he can fade it, he can draw it. Sometimes what's interesting is certain weeks his draw is working better than his fade, so he draws it more. Other weeks his fade's better. You know, so he's really, I mean, he's always in the top 4 to 1 to 5 or 6 in proximity in iron play on tour. So, you know, with him, a lot of what we've done with Tom is A, when I first started teaching him, he'd want to run the center of his pelvis towards the target on the backswing. And then he would counterbalance and turn his upper body back. So we've worked really hard to get him to stabilize his right leg and not give up any pelvic. Just if I can keep him at zero with his pelvis, where the average guy with their pelvis moves about an inch and a half to an inch to the right, the center of their pelvis, and then they go about 3, 3.5 to 4 inches to the left through the hip. With him, I just try to maintain it and keep it at zero so he doesn't run out of space in front of him. You know, so he still has his 4 inches to go forward. If that makes sense. And then, you know, we work so hard with his driver to teach him to stay behind it, you know, because if he stay because the way he swings at it where he stays bent over, his left shoulder goes way up in the air through the hit. So we just if we can get him behind it and he can bring the club in there and make the shaft about 90 degrees and not have any forward lean with his driver shaft, then he drives it pretty well, you know.
He kind of his left shoulder kind of has to do that, right? I mean, it's
Yeah.
from where he is in the backswing of the spine. That's interesting with the pelvis though, and keeping it zero because of the amount of. I mean,
Yeah.
that's just. I mean, really, that's the secret sauce, Scott. Is that's the pattern. He's not going to change that spine, so that pelvis
Yeah.
can't be running. It can't be running out in front of it to the right in the
Yeah.
backswing.
If it goes out, if it starts going to the target in his backswing, he just gets stuck, you know. And
Well, the other.
the interesting thing about Tom is Tom has way more right arm bend than the average guy. So it's kind of how his right arm goes up and around. The average tour guy has about 80. You know, somewhere between 90 and 70 degrees of right elbow bend at the top, and then Tom gets it up into the hundreds. So, you know, you got to get that arm out of there, but he does a great job of doing it. He doesn't add to it on the down, he just has max bend at the top.
The
You
other
know,
thing
if you
he
take
does, it's
somebody, go ahead.
go ahead. I was well, I'll tee up in this and then keep going. The other thing he does, which is very unique, and again for those watching, you know, he gets the club a little, the downswing plane is on top of the backswing plane, which
Yeah, he's not some textbook shallow out on top of your right forearm guy. It's kind of, you know, just in the video, it looks a little bit steep and then he shallows it about hands high through hands high. But like he's unbelievable when if you just stop this video from when the club catches his hands on the downswing to through impact, I mean the face is so stable and you see why he's such a good iron player. But yeah, he's uniquely different is, you know, he comes out of there a little bit steep and then he shallows it late. And there's plenty of guys that do that. I mean, not everybody is like the internet guy where they drop their arms way behind them. And, you know, it's like I see that instantly all the time on Instagram where everybody's like, well, let's get our arms way deep in behind us and spin open. Well, a lot of people aren't built to do that, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Not everybody's can fly open at impact, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you
I know I
have,
can. I mean, I'm
I mean,
47 and
I just look at, you know, I've done so many 3Ds. You know, there's a lot of tour guys that they're lucky at impact if their pelvis gets back to actually the turn they made on the backswing. You know, that's most, you know, 30, 35 hip turn back at 35 at impact's pretty good, man.
Yeah.
You know.
It's interesting because we had Shaheen Nakajavani on last week, and we were talking about Jeremy Paul, which is he got his PGA Tour card this year. And another guy that kind of takes it inside behind him, way more so than Hoagie, way more.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in. And then, you know, and then he, you know, he kind of gets it back on top like Hoagie. And it's like, well, talking through, you know, it's fine. Like that's a pattern that you'll see. And like his grip strong enough where the face isn't open. The shaft still kind of pitches back. You know, it's not like the shaft is steepening where he's coming over the top, which for an amateur player, like, and I know you see this too, Scott, and some of the amateurs I'm sure that you teach, like they'll go in and then they'll come out, you know, they'll come over it, but that shaft's not doing what Hoagie's doing. You know, that club face isn't doing what Hoagie's is doing. It's that shaft gets heavy, steep, and then that's, you know, it's a crash course to figure out what you got to do to make it work from there. So there are times, you know, I think where this particular pattern, this high skill set player, right, that look, it's in behind him a little bit, but the shaft still shallows a little, even though he's on top coming down, the shaft still has some pitch to it. The face is secure and they can turn and cover it.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a huge shallow to steep guy, you know, so ideally for me, you know, golf swing I love is one where the guy swings out of top. And if you catch it about two or three clicks coming out of the top, the shaft's laid back and it's pointed over the ball. So then their option to touch the golf ball is to go into last minute steep, you know. So
say that one more time. Say that one more time. So it comes out.
So I like shallow to steep. So like, okay. So let's just talk about textbook guys, like somebody like Boo Weekly. So Boo swings it up there, and when he changes direction and the shaft starts coming out, and if you, you know, on a video, just click it around where you can see the whole shaft and draw a line down it. And then if it's pointed over the top of the ball, like it'd be 6-7 inches past on the outside of the ball. Okay. Well, the guy's not going to swing that club over the top of that ball and miss it. He's going to go into a last minute steep and shut the face and use like some lead wrist flexion and thump down on it, stabilize the face. So I always tell people I love shallow to steep. That where guys get in trouble is when they swing it out of the top, and if you draw a line on that shaft, it points between the ball and their feet.
Right.
Well, only thing that guy can do is lift the handle up through the head, and you got an unstable club face.
You know? Gotcha. Yeah. So shallow to steep, shallow in early transition.
Yeah. And shallow, and then last minute steep down through the head, and the handle turns down and goes left. And yeah.
Well, and so I think that's the great point here with Jeremy Paul last week, Tom Hoagie this week, is that it shallows, you know, right there. Like to your point, it's turned, the shaft's doing its thing, but then at the bottom, he can really turn and thump on it.
Yeah.
Same thing with Mav. It's not pulling down on it right here where it goes steeper, because then if it goes steeper in early transition, then you've got to stall out and you got to crank the high handle, which, you know, we see, and I see in spades in here as well, you know, especially for the better player, Scott, the better player amateur, if they steepened it a little in transition, they'll come down and they'll raise that handle and they'll let it out and they'll actually hit some pretty good shots. You know, the higher handicap, they'll come down steeper, but they'll just dive over it, you know, and they'll just, you know, come over the top out in front. That's the higher handicap. So yeah, it's good stuff. It's interesting. You gotta let yourself. I have a lot of teachers that listen to the podcast. You know, I think it's fair to say we all kind of have our things we like to see, but if you're working with players at the caliber that you are, I think you have to be able to come off of that and understand that pattern and work with that pattern, which you clearly do with Matt McNeely and Hoagie.
I mean, basically the things that I kind of teach. I care a ton about the center of the pelvis, what it's doing. You know, I care a ton about left arm parallel, how much, you know, if a golfer's setting straight up and down at a dress at 90 degrees with their spine, what's the spine bend? How much right bend do they have left arm parallel on the down? Because the farther the center of the pelvis and the center of the sternum get apart through impact, the less the quality of the strike generally. So that, you know, if you took a textbook guy, like somebody that's really pretty, that everybody loves their golf swing, they're going to be left arm parallel on the downswing. Their spine's going to be roughly 90 degrees. They're going to be a guy that probably turns their shoulders 110 degrees and the right elbow bends probably 80. They're not going to add any at all right elbow bend on the down. They're just going to start widening the right arm. And whenever they'll use that where they stay really neutral till about left arm parallel, and then they go into right bend at that point as a shallowing mechanism. The one thing I could tell coaches is the biggest shallower in golf in the downswing is spine tilt. So you'll get some kid in there and he's like 110 if you're 90, so he's 110 at impact. The average tour guy at impact right bend with an iron is in the 90s, 98, 97, 96. You know, you'll get these kids in and they'll be 110, 115 with an iron. Driver's right bend for tour guys is about 104 to 110. So, you know, it's just that I just watch that spine. A lot of times, what the spine's doing has such an effect. If you get somebody that like the first move is they move their spine way off to the right and you can't get their arms up in front of them, the club's always behind them. It's probably has more to do with how they're pushing their spine to the right and they just can't lift their arms enough to get it up in front of them, you know, stuff like that.
And would it be fair to say that the improvement of that spine is a journey? Like oftentimes,
Oh,
like
yeah.
you just don't go from what you mentioned, 110 to, was it, would you say 90,
Yeah,
95,
97, 90, you know.
97? Yeah.
Yeah, and you get the guys in there that will never have a back injury. Like I 3D'd Ryan Palmer like a couple years ago. He was one of the only tour guys that I ever saw. Like at Impact, he was right bend was like 94. Guy's never gonna hurt his back.
Yeah.
I mean, he
Interesting.
has no compression in the bottom of his spine. So, you know, with the longevity of players, like I had Annie Park in a few weeks back. I've started helping her and she had too much right bend, which her bottom, lower right back was hurting her. So we're working hard on that for her health, you know? So it's
Well,
just like stuff like that, you know?
it's every year. Every year you hear, the injury from right bend,
Yeah.
through impact. There's no
Yeah,
doubt.
it's a bad animal. You need to manage it for sure.
Right. Quick note here from our sponsor, Lab Putters.
If you're like most golfers, you blame yourself when you miss a short putt. So after you hold back the urge to throw your putter in the lake, don't do that. You try to fix your putting stroke. But how long does that last? 1 week, one round, one hole? There's a company called Lab Golf that doesn't think you should be blaming yourself. That's because all putters have this thing called torque, which means the putter face is trying to twist during stroke. So you grip it like a snake. What Lab Golf did is they figured out how to make putters with no torque. They call it lie angle balance. And you have to feel it to believe it. I did. The Lab Golf putter, you don't have to use a funny putting grip to try to keep the face square. You can putt it any way you want because Lab Golf putter stays perfectly square by itself. It's effortless. To see how much easier putting can be, head over to labgolf.com.
All right, so here's a picture of Rob Lowe, the actor. Okay.
Yeah.
And this was a video, and I love Rob Lowe. He's one of my favorite people. I've never met him. Just every time I hear him talk, and he just seems like a super cool dude. And he loves golf and he can play golf. He's a pretty good player. And I posted his video and I said, look, this is a pattern that I see a lot in the studio from amateurs. And I made the comment that I said, if I taught Rob how to turn, that he would, the right side of his pelvis, taught him how to turn, get a little higher, maybe just put a little extension in his spine. Like he'd probably hit the ball 15 to 20 yards further. Like, and I say that not to like as blowing smoke. Like that is things that happen, like, and it's happened in your range too, right? Like where you'll lengthen someone out and all of a sudden they're like, wow, I had no idea that I could actually turn like that. Because at first they push back. They're like, well, I don't know if I'm capable of doing that. Well, you can screen them and then you show them like, look, can your right hip do that? Can your spine extend a little bit, which would probably put your lower back in a better position. You won't have so much back pain because all this flexion that you're reefing on your lower back as you turn. And so, I was like, look, he's leaving 15 on the table. And people are like, there's no way. I'm like, look, this is a pattern that we see a lot. I call it, Scott, it's the beginning of the old man swing, right? Where you just quit. Yeah. You quit turning and your spine stays in flexion and your swing just gets shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter. And then pretty soon you're just right with the arms. So I don't know if you see this where, and for our audience listening, not much hip turn. His hips are pretty level. His pelvis pretty level. His upper body is in what we kind of call flexion to the right, and his hands with the driver are under his right shoulder. That's the top of the swing. And wow. So do you see this, and do you find yourself with amateurs like lengthening them out some to the top?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. Like, I look at that video, it actually hurts me. Like, on a 3D, his right pelvis might be level, which a tour guy on three, you know, the right side of their pelvis goes up somewhere between 14 and 25, 27 degrees.
Okay.
So he's getting no help. His center of the pelvis is obviously forward right there from where it should be. He's getting no help with his ground forces. Like, he's not having anything that throws him back over on top of it. And all he can really do is slide his hips underneath him and then kind of fall back and hit it, I guess. I mean, that's powerless. Like, I mean, it'd be easy to wind that guy up. You know, you can tell. I mean, he's turning his shoulders doing that to like over 95 degrees, probably.
He's got plenty of range of motion. When it looks like.
Oh, my God. Yeah. That's a gross looking pelvis.
So how do you, Scott, if you were to take that, how would you teach the pelvis? Like, what is, walk me through a minute here of, here's what I want your pelvis to do.
Well, I mean, the first thing I would do is I'd 3D him, first of all. Okay. And I would show him that if you allow your pelvis, the center of your pelvis, to move to the right, all of a sudden your left knee is going to start acting correct. It'd be interesting to see what his knee bends are right there. And then the thing is, it's going to keep him from getting so right bent right there. And his pelvis is going to go up, and you know, it's way easier when you can measure with that gears, and I can just show a guy like, hey,
sure,
you're at like 0 or 1 degree of lift, and we get him in there and showing the patterns and show his pelvis move up, and then he'll make a swing and it'll be three times longer than that, you know.
Yeah.
So I'd move his pelvis to the right. I'd get him to stand on top of his right leg. A lot of times I'm doing somebody like that, luckily my gears is an indoor studio, which I really love because it kind of takes the ball flight out of there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, make this sloppy. Like, we're going to go super sloppy and then we're going to put it back together. So I'd make him keep his head still and push his pelvis way to the right. And, you know, like overcook it like 2.5, sure, 3 inches to the right. It's going to make his pelvis tilt way up. Mm-hmm. Yep. You're standing on a pressure mat when you're doing it. I'm like, see how you can shear that thing forward now and just kind of show him how to move the pressure around. My guess is his pressure just spins in a ball underneath his feet right there.
Do you ever tell someone, you said stand up the right leg, I think that's the word you said, stand up the right. Yeah. Do you let them, you just like, hey, let that right knee go, let it lose flexion.
Yeah, I mean, there's the thing I've noticed about the 3D, there's two or three different knee patterns, man. One of them's a Boo. So Boo loses 6 degrees of bend in his right knee and bends his left knee to about 27. So he gets about 18 or 19 degrees of pelvic tilt. You know, a guy, then there's the other guy that his right knee just kind of stays where it is. Like, if it's 18 at address, it'll fluctuate between 18, 19, 20, 18, and his left knee bends to 35. So he gets more tilt with bending the left knee, you know. And then there's the other one where the guy kind of adds some bend in his right knee just a little bit, you know, gains a little bit, but he bends the holy crap out of his left knee. That's not the best pattern. That's what you see a lot of amateurs show up with. But there's people that do that that are real successful, you know. So it's just, but the average bend is either you straighten the right leg a little bit, lose a few degrees of bend, bend the left knee, not quite as much, or you maintain right knee bend and you bend the left more. That's kind of the two that I see all the time.
I mean, 20 years ago, it was, you know, I mean, it was right knee was flexed. I mean, there wasn't much going on there. It was like turn the upper and lower stabilizes, and then you go from there. And as we've gone on here, I think with the influence of gears and others, understanding about other patterns, and like, no, I mean, like that knee can, you know, there can be some right side's got to climb a little bit more.
I mean, kind of the area, if you don't get 14 degrees of right pelvic tilt, you're in trouble.
Okay.
It's about 14 is about the minimum, man.
Okay.
You got to have that much to give you the downhill so you can slide over there on top of it and then get up and out. And, you know, when the knees cross back over, a lot of times on 2D videos, and maybe this will help some instructors, whenever I call it the uni, but whenever on a down the line video and you're just using like my iPhone on the range, and I'll watch, and if those two knees, they normally cross over, like, and what I mean by crossing over is at the top of the golf swing, there's more bend in the left knee than the right knee. And then as they go down, they change places. Then, you know, at impact, there's less bend in the left knee and more in the right. Normally, you know, textbook kind of Adam Scott or Justin Rose or somebody like that, that happens where the knees cross over, where they have the uni knee about one click below left arm parallel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people send me videos all the time. Like a guy sent me a video from California, he's a good player. Well, he goes, my impact's not good. Well, he moved the club like one frame out of the top and he had the uni knee. So he's way out of sequence, man. He can't thump it. You know, he's not going to have any phase control. So that's like an easy frame to look at. If, you know, like if an instructor's listening, if you'll jump on and look at an Adam Scott or somebody like that, you know, that's like a really pretty golf swing, just watch where you only see one knee and then they change and you'll start getting the idea of kind of when that is. And I'm telling you, that's one of those things that's kind of very often, it's not very often that it's not right there with a really good player, even though they might be doing, that's where a Kirky and a Hoagie and a Boo and a Nick Watney, and we've worked hard on, I've worked on Watney for the last year and a half. And we've got him back where he's playing pretty good. And I mean, he was so out of sequence.
Wow.
So we've worked super hard on that. He slid, you know, when I got him on the pressure mat the first time, he had like 30 degrees of bend in the left knee and was just sliding forward. And he was center of his pelvis was 7.5 inches forward and his arms were way behind him and he couldn't drive it on the planet. And now he's got where he's driving it really well. We fixed all that. So I'm expecting a pretty good year out of him this year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's a little rapid fire here. Show us your swing. Here's number one. Joe Holmes.
Yeah.
All right. So look at one more time here. So we've got a swing here. It's, you know, looks a little laid off at the top and then maybe pulling on that handle a little bit. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, what I'd tell that guy, he's got an inverted lead forearm. I talk a lot about with my people, the bone that connects between your wrist and your left elbow, he has it twisted the wrong direction. So the first thing I'd do with that guy is I would make him take the club one-handed and swing it up, left-handed only, and swing it up over his head, and he'd get rid of that gross face angle that's behind him. Because this guy's lead arm needs to go up in the air and he needs to rotate his lead forearm. That bone, he needs to turn that bone so it goes up so then he can get into a shallow. I'd have him do that first and show it to him. And then the next thing I would do is have him put his right hand on there and not have any grip pressure, like open palm, and let him swing it up around him. And it would clean that top up, and then he could be in a place where he shallows. But he can't do anything where the center of mass is on that golf swing. All he can do is be in a steep.
Mm-hmm. So the club would be more down the line, right?
It'd be up in front with way more of an open club face. And You know, I know everybody loves the flexion thing anymore, but a lot of people use flexion out of the top to shallow. Like there's different patterns. There's arm guys that drop their arms a lot and drop it in behind him. Then there's a guy like Chandler Phillips, like I was hanging out with him on the range last week. He uses lead wrist flexion to shallow the club. So if he uses it up in the backswing or gets a club in the wrong place, he can't put any flexion in to shallow it out. Like that guy doesn't ever look like a big arm dropper to me. So he's got
No.
to have the room for a shallow, and he just doesn't, you know?
Yeah. All right. So less laid off, Joe. Got to get that
Yeah.
club pointing more down the line.
I'd tell him if I was him, if he could just set his iPhone there and grab a one-handed. And if you'll just hold your arm out, and I'm not talking about lead wrist, don't do anything with your wrist. Just allow your arm to go up, just like if you're standing with your arm with no club and you turn it around your body, you're going to notice if you got a watch on that watch starts turning up towards the sky, and that's going to get the club out in front of you. And his lead arm needs to go up significantly more than it is in the beginning of the golf swing. See how it goes behind him?
Yep.
He's just trapped. Yeah. And then he can't get the correct right elbow bend because he doesn't have room for it.
All right, here's number two. This is Chris Westlake.
I mean, that one there is complicated. Yeah, I mean, that one you kind of need to see a face on because it looks like it's all arms and no turn. You know, my guess is this guy, and this is a pretty textbook amateur swinger. This guy'd come in and he'd have 75 degrees of shoulder turn, and he'd have 120 degrees of right elbow bend. So we'd have to get in there and figure out how do we swap those? How do we give you 90 degrees of shoulder turn and a 90 degree right elbow bend, and you'd have a chance then. But like, you know, what's crazy is he does a really good job of shallowing it out and kind of
He
standing
does.
there and throwing it. Like,
The
I mean,
club
he's
pitches back behind it. I can't pause it right now because the way I got this video loaded in. But if it was halfway down, that shaft would be, kind of on his left arm. But it, but it,
I
but
mean,
it's, but it's falling back. It's shallowing.
I guarantee you that guy was a good athlete. Like he played sports and he's got a hand eye, you know.
Yep.
So, but he's, you know, if we could see a face on, I guarantee he has no shoulder turn. It's all arm bend. And, you know, the best or rule of thumb generally, and Hoagie's not like this, but a rule of thumb generally is you want to have way more shoulder turn than right elbow bend. You know, Rory McIlroy, the ultimate, 132 degrees of shoulder turn with a driver, 54 degrees of right elbow bend.
All right. So we got to, so I think for you, Chris, we need probably the face on, and I think it'd be fair to say a little more turn. Let the left shoulder come across, maybe even let that right hip kind of climb a little bit more too.
Yeah, if he'd send us you know, if you want to do like a after the show type deal, if he'll send us a face on down the line, I'll do a voiceover and send it to you, and you can send it to him
Okay. All right,
what
cool.
I would do, and then you can obviously you're a really good instructor, you can tell him what you do. Play it again there. He's a guy that picks it up. So once again, this is where I'd get him left-handed only. And I'd get the club rotating and working as that bone and that bone from here to here, working correctly around him, because where he gets it so out and shut, then all he can do is thrust the throat because he's trying to throw it behind him with thrust.
He's pretty steep. He's not a
Yeah,
lot of
super
depth.
steep. Yeah.
Yeah, up and down. And then as he comes down, he's then the pelvis is trying to thrust forward to make some room.
Yeah, 100%. Like he's got to learn how to get that club going around him. And once again, like what I in my bay, I've got a golf club that's way out of swing weight. Like I've got this super heavy, you know, it's like two heads in one. All you know, like you can take something like an old club around your house and put like a bolt on it or put a bunch of lead tape on it or something to get it way out of whack. So you can start filling the center of mass and work around in a circle. So that guy, I'd probably get him in the bay and give him that heavy club and show him how to get the club going around him and then feel the weight and how the weight could work in his favor instead of against him, then he wouldn't thrust so much, you know. The place in the golf swing you can really work on is backswing. That's where you got some time. By the time you change direction and the club changes direction, you've used up 70-75% of your 0.95 of a second. So, like, getting the club started correctly and getting it all in position gives you a chance to have success. But if you have that and you're working on impact or downswing things, you're never going to do anything for yourself, you know.
All right. There you go, Jacob. Got to get it around you. Turn the left arm. Things work a little bit more around the body, and all of a sudden now you're in a different position where you can hit it more from the inside. Your pelvis is going to want to not thrust forward as much and, you know, all those things.
That guy just to stand in front of a mirror and just take it one-handed and watch him just turn it around him, and he'll love how it looks, you know.
Okay. All right, so we got to look at one more player here, a guy that you work with that's in the field, Jacob Bridgman. But before that, a few words here on a... So I got a little in-studio series coming, Scott. When you're here for the players, maybe you can swing in.
I forgot to come over last year.
Yeah, so Parker McLaughlin will be in studio this week on Friday. And got a nice live audience coming. Yeah, Parker's great. So we got a live audience. We're going to record that. We'll post that next week on the podcast. Don't miss that. And I got feedback from a lot of people, and I appreciate some of the audio things that – for the in-studio series, the questions. So this time around, I'll be repeating the question, so our audience listening and watching from beyond will be able to hear that. So we've got all that taken care of. And then Players Week, Dana will be in here. So Dana Dahlquist can be in on
He's great. Players He's a really Week. Good so, friend of mine.
Yeah, so we got to look, man. So who's who on the Stripe Show podcast? Scott Hamilton this week, Parker McLaughlin next week. This is how we do it. All right, so... Jacob Bridgman, tell us about this young man.
So Jacob has a 10-finger grip, played at Clemson, got on through PGAU. When I started teaching him, he didn't drive it very well. And he was a guy, he had the club, when he originally started with him, he left bent a mile. Like, so he would, when he'd wind up, his spine would lean over there into the 70s. And then he would right bend really hard to shallow it. He had the club way out in front of him and no loft on the face, and he was real long. So he was one of those guys that when it got to the top, all the loft got popped off the face. And I talk to people all the time. The problem with modern golf now and with the golf balls we play, the landing angle has got to be about 46 to have any success out there. And when I started teaching him, he was a guy because he leaned it so much. He couldn't hit, you know, he couldn't hit a 5-iron over about 75 or 80 feet. You just can't have success on tour like that. So we spent a lot of time cleaning up his backswing, shortening his arm swing, getting him not to lean his left, keeping him more neutral. And we actually, he was a guy that I worked on getting some of the lean out just because he had so much. So we've tried to stand him up more, make it more neutral, and get him to be able to hit, because we had to add a bunch of loft when I started teaching him to his irons so he could hit it up in the air. And we really don't want to do that, you know. So just yesterday, we bent his clubs back to standard, and he was hitting his 4-iron like 100 feet, which is amazing compared to like 70. So this kid's really good, man. He's a really good putter, great guy, South Carolina. So I'm really excited about his opportunity out here. But we've done a massive overhaul on him over the last couple of years. So
is it fair to say, so based off of the adding,
and he's one of those freak athletes. Like, I think he can dunk. Like, he's 5'10", man. He looks
like a great athlete.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Yeah.
So more right bend and backswing, less left, less lean.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get him. Now, like when he winds up, he gets to like 88, 87, yeah, like that. Because he'd lean way forward and then fall way back, and that made him lean it more. You know, it's bad on your back. He had no loft on the face whatsoever at the top. So we've added a bunch of loft up there on the down the lines. We've shortened his golf swing a bunch. Just so, you know, the more he swings it back, the more he de-lofts it. So a little of that had to do with control the loft, made his right arm way wider, less right elbow bend. You know, he was hitting drivers the other day, 183. So he has tons of gas, you know?
Wow.
So the kid has a huge upside. And a lot of it is like, he's such a great putter. It's like, you know, I'm no great short game guy by any means. You know, I teach a short game to my D1 kids, and, you know, I'll help whoever wants me to help them. But, you know, I'm not a guy like a Tim Yelverton that's amazing at it. So, but when I get guys like Maverick or this kid that can putt, I can make you hit a driver and play. That's not that complicated, you know.
So yeah, those guys,
they're great for me.
Yeah. You don't have any of them. You don't have any students that are like, you know, high maintenance, do you? None of these guys are high maintenance, right?
Nah, man. I've done this so long. I know their shtick before they, like, I've traveled out here since 04, 05. So I know every guy. And, you know, I'm super particular who I teach, you know, because I always have six or seven dudes. So, like, I already know what people are like before. And if they're not, you know, if I got somebody striping, like Kirky, when he's got it going, he don't care if I show up or not. Mm-hmm. You know, if Kirky wants something, a rule of thumb with Chris is when he wants something, he asks me, and then I tell him things. If he's not asking me, I don't tell him anything.
Right.
You know, and you have to have the ability, these tour events, like, you got to talk less, you know, just work on the main things. And, you know, you shouldn't be out there on Wednesday giving some major lesson. Like, half the time it's like alignment and basic things like that are not that complex, because you should have done the work before you ever got to that point. So, you know, it's just, we work on wedge deliveries and carries. And then Hunter Stewart is a stats guy that I'm really close with, and he'll tell me what's really important for each course, and we'll kind of work on that on the range. And, you know, with this new TrackMan kind of strokes game thing, we'll set up games for them to do on the range that helps them on the course and stuff like that. So it's not exactly like the whole time we're not here just working on technique, to be honest with you, you know.
All right, let's finish up with this. I know you got a full day. Here's a drill that I pulled from your Instagram. You need to go follow Scott on Instagram.
Yeah.
And so we're going to listen to it, okay? And then I want you to tell the audience what you were doing here.
I want you to hit me one where you feel like this right foot goes like this through the hip. Like, take your right foot and feel like it goes, pulls that way and in, the knee in, through the hip. That's just like a ground reaction force, you know, that the foot doesn't push forward, it pulls back through the hip, so... If I got somebody that gets the right knee blocking them out, like that right knee, you know, if you draw a line up over, if you drew a 90-degree line off a down-the-line video off the shoestrings, that knee should not bump, but maybe just fractionally over that line. And if that knee's banging in there, it pulls the pelvis in and gets the right side of the pelvis in the way of the right elbow on the down and get you stuck. So I'll do that with guys. Like, I did that a bunch with Michael Johnson, the Corn Ferry guy.
Oh, yeah.
Just because he would throw that knee in there and get his arm stuck in behind his hip. So we did a ton of that. And it's just, you know, it's like there's, if you think about guys like Scotty Scheffler or Greg Norman, you know, those guys pulled that foot back in behind him. And, you know, just the average guy, think of any times you hit a good drive where your right foot slips behind you and you stripe it and you about fall down. You know, that's a proper ground reaction force. And that's why I'll teach that sometimes to certain people that I'm looking to do certain things, you know.
Do you ever do this where sometimes with that, I'll get a player to hit some little three-quarter wedges And I'll actually get them to just kind of keep the foot on the instep. Like I won't even let them, like, you know, go on the instep and then up to the toe. So not like a full up on the toe finish, but more just kind of like the old Tiger Stinger, where the right foot would just kind of hang out a little bit on the instep, and then the body would turn, and there would be like this little three-quarter finish without the full right foot up to the toe.
Yeah, I do that all the time. I mean,
love that drill. Love it.
I try to get the right foot working the right way, which makes the pelvis work the right way, which opens you up more. You know, it's a chain reaction. It is. You know, and for some people that works unbelievable. It's like, oh, okay, I feel it. Or, you know, I'll put the water bottle down the outside of the right foot and get it to tilt in and then turn and not knock the bottle over. And it's just, you know, some people, you do that and then makes them run their pelvis way out in front of them. And other people, they do it and then it makes them turn so nice. So you got to experiment. Yeah. A lot of times in a lesson, I'll be the first one to go, okay, let's not do that. I screwed that up.
Let me try something. That's true. Here, you know? I'm so glad to hear you say this, because, like, okay, I'm not the only one this is happening to, right? Like, sometimes
everybody. Like, I'm honest, you know? And a lot of times I just tell people, I'm like, let's, you know, my biggest rules when I really start teaching somebody, I try to figure out what the tumor is, and I want to cut the tumor out before I give the plastic surgery. You know what I mean? It's like, let's figure. And a lot of times when you fix the thing that's really hurting them, the other things that kind of fall in line, you don't have to say as much.
Those are the best lessons, right? When they just, everything, the dominoes just fall exactly how you anticipated. And but sometimes they don't.
True.
And sometimes, like, to your point with the foot, like, okay, you get things the way you want it. It's like, damn, this is right where I want it to be. And all of a sudden the pelvis runs in a little bit and they hit on the hawser. You're like, okay, you know, just let that play out. Right. Just let it smooth out. And like, it's not. And then you got to get in. Yeah. You got to correct that, you know? And it's, so sometimes it's nice when it's like the dominoes just fall and they're, let's go. And then sometimes you got to add, you got to get in there and mold something that maybe is a little out of place based off of what you've shown up to that point.
Yeah, you're not trying hard at teaching if you ain't seen a bunch of shanks. I've seen a pile of them, man. Like, my daughter,
so true.
One. I was doing something with her, and she hit one in my indoor bay, and it hit the corner and flew back and broke a TV. She thought it was funny as hell.
It's humbling. You haven't taught. You're not exactly there. That's one of the best lines I've ever heard on this podcast. Ever.
Yeah.
You're not trying hard enough unless you've seen a bunch of shit.
I mean, I've seen tons of them.
I got a few holes. I got a few holes over here. This screen here, week one when I opened the studio a month and a half or a year and a half ago. I mean, pow, like, you got ball hits the corner of the TV like a week into this thing.
Oh yeah. I've done it. I got broke TV in there right now. I haven't replaced them. Familiar. I mean, I've banged them off the wall. I've got hit in the shin. Like, I mean, I've done every dumb thing you can do, you know. So,
Scott, you're the man. I appreciate it. This is fun.
Yeah, buddy. Enjoyed it.
Appreciate you sharing. Good luck to your boys, Matt McNeely, Jacob Bridgman, Lanto Griffin, Brandon. I mean, we haven't. Like, this second time you've been on, like, we looked at Hoagie and Chris, we looked at Kirky a lot last time. So next time we'll get into Thornberry.
You know, we ought to give you some before and afters of Watney. That's super interesting.
Yeah.
Because everybody loves Nick Watney. That's the best guy on the planet, man.
I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's super. It's fascinating.
All right. That's a deal.
Cool.
All right, Scott. Appreciate your time, man. Thanks for joining us here on the pod.
All right. Thanks.